Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Navy announces $1.6 billion plan to store high-level nuclear waste at new facility at INL. Tri-Cities-based irrigation group wants Endangered Species Act God Squad to limit salmon and steelhead recovery efforts under the Trump administration, and sends a letter to the Trump administration transition team. Representatives Troy and Jordan from District 5 speak about the upcoming legislative session at the League of Women Voters meeting in Moscow today. And Moscow City Council hears an airport report on construction of the new runway from airport manager Tony Bean that says the new realigned runways will go on land that was at one time considered for a bypass around Pullman. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robertus, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Tri-Cities-based Columbia Snake River Irrigators Association has sent a letter to Donald Trump's transition team to convene a panel that's known as the God Squad to declare a previous federal plan to save salmon null and void. The 1978 amendment to the Endangered Species Act allows the creation of the so-called God Squad panel, formerly called an Endangered Species Committee, to allow protected species to go extinct or be harmed when it decides human activities impacting the species are more important. If the previous plan, which has been declared illegal by U.S. District Judge Michael Simon in Portland this year, is put back into place, it would take breaching the four Lower Snake River dams off the table. It would also stop federal agencies from writing a new environmental impact statement and cost-benefit analysis for breaching the dams ordered by Judge Simon. That EIS and cost-benefit analysis is expected to take 5 years. Columbia Snake River Irrigators Association board member Daryl Olson told the Lewiston Tribune the group sent the letter before Trump becomes president to make sure the issue is on the new administration's radar screen. Olson said, "Our view is that it's always better to be an initiator than to stand back and wait for things to happen. If we can get some people thinking about it now, that is our objective. We don't want to go through another multi-year environmental impact statement process." Olson said he believes the 13 species of salmon and steelhead listed under the Endangered Species Act are good candidates for God Squad intervention because he believes recovery is nearly impossible. Save Our Wild Salmon Coalition Executive Director Joseph Bogard said, "We would much rather see them embrace a full and fair analysis of the cost and benefits of the Lower Snake River dams so the fiscal elements could be well understood by the public and explore options for replacing the minimal services the dams provide with alternatives that truly protect and restore salmon and would create jobs and would fairly treat taxpayers both regionally and nationally." The U.S. Navy plans to build a $1.6 billion facility at the Idaho National Laboratory near Idaho Falls to store nuclear waste from the Navy warships and submarines that run on nuclear reactors. The Navy issued a record of decision made public yesterday, saying they will build the facility after a public environmental review process. U.S. Naval Nuclear Propulsion Program Director Admiral James F. Caldwell Jr. signed the record of decision. The Department of Energy issued a statement saying this action will provide the infrastructure necessary to support the naval nuclear reactor defueling and refueling schedules to meet the operational needs of the U.S. Navy. Federal officials say they expect construction to start in 2019 and continue for 5 years, with the storage facility functioning between 2024 and at least 2060. Naval Reactors Facility spokesperson Don Dahl told the Associated Press officials plan to have workers submerge the radioactive waste in water to cool it and then transfer it to dry storage areas. Under a 1995 agreement between the Department of Energy and the state of Idaho, and a 2008 amendment, shipments of nuclear waste to INL are limited and most nuclear waste must be removed from the state by 2035. The agreement also applies to spent nuclear fuel from the Navy. However, with the suspension of the Yucca Mountain Repository Project in Nevada, the nation has no permanent repository for spent high-level nuclear waste. The 1995 agreement allows radioactive fuel waste to be transported to INL after 2035, but it must only stay for the 6 years it takes to cool underwater in the pools. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The two House members from Idaho District 5 discussed their plans for the 2017 legislative session at a Moscow League of Women Voters forum today. Both are returning to Boise for a second two-year term starting in January. Republican Carolyn Troy of Genesee implied, with the incoming Trump administration, it is now unclear what strategy would best help Idaho's Medicaid gap population. The gap population is approximately 73,000 people in the state who make too much to be eligible for Medicaid, but too little to be eligible for subsidized health insurance under the Federal Affordable Care Act. Here's Carolyn Troy.
Given the uncertainty in Washington, D.C., with what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act, that really right now the most that we can hope for is to shift some dollars that are currently being spent on the Millennium Fund and some other dollars, and I've talked to Chairman Wood about this, to really shift those dollars to beef up primary care through the community health networks. I think we all wish that there was more, but with the uncertainty of what's going to happen in Washington, D.C., I think that's probably the reality, and I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news there. I know that Chairman Wood has been very adamant about finding a resolution to this issue, and he has not changed his mind on that, and he's the chairman of the House Health and Welfare Committee.
That was Republican Representative Carolyn Troy of Genesee. Democratic Representative Paulette Jordan of Plummer said she has to take on a lot more because Democrats lost 4 legislative seats in this year's elections, including 3 in northern Idaho. Jordan is the only Democratic legislator north of Boise now. The new Democratic House Minority Leader is Matt Erpelding of Boise after John Rushi of Lewiston lost his House seat in the District 6 election last month. Jordan said she met with the Democratic caucus last week in preparation for a meeting with Republican Governor Butch Otter next week.
Some of the issues that I've brought up were what are some projections he has in mind, and if we're going to continue looking at, for example, educational perspectives on are we going to do maybe another take on our tuition freeze, and will we lock tuition for students who maybe make a commitment to graduate within 4 years. We've been pushing this for the past few years now since I've been in, and I'm hoping to see something similar to come out of this this session. The other issue that I have is the career ladder. So we have a 5-year commitment to infrastructural investment there, and I'm hoping to continue just simply raising the funds necessary to ensure that our teachers have their needs met. The other issue I have is what I'm seeing, which is frustrating, is what the leadership has mentioned is basically cutting taxes. And I'd be all for cutting taxes, to be honest with you. I would love to see taxes cut, but the issue is you cut taxes, you can't pay your bills. So we still have needs with our infrastructure, roads and bridges. We have needs with our education, and of course the career ladder to keep in mind. So To be honest, if we have to be the adults in the room, I will be the adult in the room. And I will say we cannot cut taxes right now. But what we're looking at are income taxes. They want to cut the income tax from 7.4% to 7.1%, which is a cut for the rich in the state, and unfortunately does not help middle-class families or low-income families in the state. So I've also heard that one of my committee men will bring up the same Sharia law issue. We fought that in state affairs. I killed it because I said, honestly, I've been part of the conversations here. We have over 1,300 farms in our district that would be impacted by this particular bill, because what it will do is impact both American court systems, striking out certain laws that also impact our negotiations with certain countries like Taiwan, for instance, and it impacts our business overseas. So for now, we'll see where that goes. I'm just concerned because we have a lot of international relations business-wise for our ag that this will tremendously impact. And I think it's just because it's such a social issue for some in the North that they think Sharia law is going to take over our world, our country. But we have to be wiser. So I'm hoping Representative Troy will stand with me on this issue. To me, we got to really be above, again, the politics and not allow religion to infiltrate our worldview. But that's one I'm really concerned about.
That was Democratic Representative Paulette Jordan of Plummer speaking at a Moscow League of Women Voters forum this afternoon. Representative Troy said she is working on a bill that would change state-imposed limits on payments to disabled people who get Medicaid.
And what it is for families who have, I'll use my own family as an example. I have a wonderful cousin in town, Andrew Becker, who is handicapped, and he, because of his Medicaid funding, he's not able to accept a lot of money from his family. This would allow families to put some money into trust for their loved ones that won't bump that family member out of being able to receive Medicaid. And it gives some dignity to those folks, and gives some peace of mind to their family. So the senator and I talked about that last week while we were in Boise, and I think he would like to see it start on the House side. So I'm doing a lot of work to try and smooth the waters for that.
That was Republican Representative Carolyn Troy of Genesee speaking at the League of Women Voters Forum. Also during the Q&A session, Representative Jordan said a major issue for her is arguing against proposals to have federal land in Idaho transferred to the state or privatized.
I would just right now set you off on a very high alert, because once that land is gone, it's out of our hands for good. And the challenge is going to be that while in the late 1930s, the folks, the citizens of Idaho, fought against the legislature politicizing our Idaho game and wildlife, the IDFG has now been positioned to basically sell these tags off to the highest bidder. That's no good. But the bigger concern for me is simply these public lands being sold off to the highest bidder. So we have to be aware. And I hope that, I think we're going to see another issue where we're going to have everyone rally down in Boise. Because you do have people who are favorable to this that think that Idaho having access to this land and owning it, as far as it being in Idaho's hands, state hands, is a good thing. One, we can't afford it, but yes, there's other issues there too, because there are bigger billionaires outside of the state who have their eyes on this land. Corporations have their eyes on this land. So we don't want any of it going to anyone. It needs to stay in public hands for good. That's where I stand. That's what I'm going to be promoting. But I do need people here, especially those of you in this room, I know, who are highly intended upon supporting it and being the voice, because they're going to have a hearing, hopefully. And I'm saying hopefully because sometimes these bills will get through committee and go straight to the House floor. But I'm hoping that we'll get enough people to rally around it, as we did last time. We were able to stop it in committee simply by having enough people there to rally against it. And it helps to have your voices there.
That was Democratic Representative Paulette Jordan of Plummer speaking at the Moscow League of Women Voters Forum at the 1912 Center today. Newly elected Republican District 5 Senator Dan Foreman did not attend today's Moscow League of Women Voters Forum. Pullman Moscow Regional Airport Manager Tony Bean told the Moscow City Council Monday night the airport acquired land for its $100 million runway realignment project that would have otherwise been used for an eastern bypass around the city of Pullman.
This is the right-of-way that goes around, that was designated to go around Pullman. And so the airport project, one of the projects was going to exist and one of them was not. There was a bypass that was supposed to, I guess if this was Pullman over here, this bypass was supposed to go all the way up and around and connect to 95. And the state of Washington Department of Transportation had it in a plan, but there was no funds for it, and it was purchased in the 70s. The city of Pullman didn't support it. Whitman County didn't support it. Washington State University didn't support it. And they were looking at a south bypass, and one project was going to survive and one not, and we are consequently buying this portion of the right-of-way for the runway to move forward because it's in a zone that you cannot have a road in. So, ironically, they can be donated as a road, but the FAA doesn't allow you to accept donated things for restricted purposes, so we are purchasing it, and we're using it as a road so they don't inadvertently destroy Highway 270.
That was Pullman Moscow Regional Airport Manager Tony Bean speaking at Monday night's Moscow City Council meeting. Bean said earth-moving crews working on the runway project have run into groundwater as they get near the underground hard clay and bedrock. He said tractors are disking the soil in an effort to get rid of the standing water that is coming up at various areas within the runway construction zone. The Pullman City Council voted last night to annex 108 acres at the intersection of U.S. Highway 195 and Old Wawawi Road so the land can be developed into a subdivision. The land, currently owned by Germain Farms, is bordered by U.S. Highway 195 to the west, Golden Hills Drive to the east, and Old Wawawi Road to the north. Ed Greer of Vancouver, Washington, submitted the application for annexation. Pullman Planning Director Pete Dickinson said the subdivision on Sunnyside Hill will have between 80 and 100 houses. Dickinson said, "It does seem like we have a continuing demand for residential subdivisions." The land annexed last night is zoned general commercial and for single-family homes. The next step after annexation is for the Pullman Planning Commission to review the subdivision plan and hold a public hearing on it. The public hearing is expected next month or in February. An email obtained by the Columbian newspaper in Vancouver indicates Union Pacific Railroad expects to spend $8.9 million in costs associated with the June 3rd oil train derailment in the Columbia Gorge at Mosier, Oregon. The newspaper reported the company is not required to disclose its costs nor any information about how much the railroad's insurance carrier will cover. 16 rail cars full of flammable Bakken crude oil derailed and caught fire near the Columbia River in June, releasing 47,000 gallons of oil out of the 448,000 gallons on board the train. In a report to the Federal Railroad Administration, Union Pacific said the fiery derailment caused $1.7 million in damage to equipment and $177,000 damage to the tracks. The rest of the $8.9 million would include remediation costs. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality will seek $400,000 reimbursement for their costs associated with the derailment, while the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency will seek $340,000 from Union Pacific. Two Washington state agencies who responded will seek a total of $66,000. Two right-wing Republican state House members from Spokane Valley have written House Joint Memorial 4000, which, if passed, would ask the White House, Congress, and the U.S. Senate to split Washington into two states. The new Eastern Washington state, which the representatives Matt Shea and Bob McCaslin want to call Liberty, would include all of Washington east of the Cascade Crest and would go to the western borders of Okanagan, Chelan, Kittitas, Yakima, and Klickitat counties. According to Spokane TV station KXLY, the proposal says, since statehood, the lifestyles, culture, and economics of eastern and western Washington have been very different. The urbanization and rapid growth in the western portions of the state has progressively heightened this divergence of cultural and economic values between the western and eastern portions of the state. If approved, the new State of Liberty would likely create two new Republican U.S. Senate seats and add two Republican voting members to the Electoral College. The mining company Montana Resources, which owns the Berkeley Pit adjacent to the city of Butte, reports as many as 10,000 snow geese landed on the toxic lake at the bottom of the pit November 28th, and almost all of them died. Montana Resources and the Atlantic Richfield Company are responsible for Superfund cleanup at the Berkeley Pit site. Atlantic Richfield is also known as ARCO. The Berkeley Pit, which is a remnant of decades of mining in the area, contains a 700-acre lake at the bottom. The Montana Standard newspaper reports the number of snow geese deaths is an estimate based on drone and airplane flights over the pit, and a final count will not be released until later. People have found a few surviving snow geese in neighborhoods near the pit and are taking them to vets for care. An EPA spokesperson says Montana Resources will pay the vet bills. The EPA is expected to investigate whether Montana Resources and Atlantic Richfield violated the agency's hazing policies. Montana Resources Environmental Affairs Manager Mark Thompson says the company did not. Thompson said, if it wasn't for the diligence and dedication of MR and ARCO people out there 24/7 trying everything and really giving it their heart and soul, this would be much, much worse. These guys really cared. Idaho officials are looking to log 40 acres of cedar trees near Lake Ponderay, but they're facing opposition from residents of the area. Idaho Fish and Game believes it can raise hundreds of thousands of dollars by selling the timber from the trees. They say the money would stay in the area and help fund future projects, but about 50 people neighboring the grove have signed a petition asking Idaho Fish and Game to reconsider. Retired U.S. Forest Service forester Jeff Pennock said he opposes the sale of the cedars, which range from 80 to 120 years old. Pennock said the cedars are healthy and could remain stable for another 200 to 300 years. This is unique enough that it's worth preserving. Petitioner Ali Hakala said this isn't what they call old growth. These are very mature trees in excellent condition. The grove is on a peninsula in Lake Ponderay and is surrounded by six private property owners, including Hakala. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, there's a winter storm watch that will be in effect from 6 p.m. tomorrow until late Friday. A long period of light accumulating snow will add up to possible moderate to heavy snow accumulations over a 24 to 36 hour period. Accumulating snow will begin Thursday afternoon in the Cascades and Thursday evening over the rest of the region. The snow will taper off most areas by late Friday. Snow showers will continue to produce accumulating snow through Saturday morning in the Idaho Panhandle Mountains. The area of the winter storm watch is most of the Idaho Panhandle and northern Idaho and most of central and eastern Washington. Snow accumulation 2 to 5 inches through the period, highest amounts near the lower east slopes of the Cascades and over Idaho. Light snow will begin late Thursday afternoon and increase in intensity Thursday night, then taper off to scattered snow showers late Friday afternoon and evening. More snow expected Saturday. A winter storm watch means there's a potential for significant snow accumulation that may impact travel. Heavy snow accumulation on area roads will make driving difficult and treacherous. The Friday morning commute will be particularly impacted. Otherwise, the forecast is calling for mostly clear tonight with a low of 9 for the Moscow Pullman area. Wind chill values as low as 1 below 0. And light east winds 5 to 9 miles per hour. 80% chance of snow after 5 p.m. tomorrow. High 25. Wind chill values as low as 5 below zero. Less than half an inch of snow expected in the daytime. 80% chance of snow Thursday night. Low 23. New snow accumulation 1 to 3 inches possible. And 80% chance of snow Friday, mainly afternoon. High 33. New snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches possible. Another 1 to 3 inches possible Friday night. Snow could be heavy at times. Low 27. And a 90% chance of snow Saturday, 2 to 4 inches possible. Snow could be heavy at times, high 32. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 16 degrees. I'm Lee Robartis. Scott Jackson assisted with tonight's newscast. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for low-income students. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.